University students continue to protest the war in Gaza. Plus, a deadly Russian strike on Odessa.
According to the latest information from Odessa, 5 people were confirmed killed and 28 injured, including 2 children and a pregnant woman. Residential buildings and civilian infrastructure were damaged.
And later, a sword attack in London, a heat wave in Asia, and a warning about beer in Europe. Today is Tuesday, April 30th, and this is VOA's Flashpoint, Global Crises. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Pro-Palestinian protests continued into the early morning hours of Tuesday at Columbia University in New York City. This despite orders from university officials to disband the protest encampment supporting Palestinians or face suspension.
We'll honor all the martyrs.
All the parents, mothers, fathers.
All the parents, mothers, fathers.
We will honor all the martyrs.
Protesters linked arms and formed a barricade in front of one of the university's main buildings. They also used outdoor tables to barricade the entrance. The crackdown at Columbia comes amid a wave of Gaza-related protests across American universities as authorities are struggling to balance the free speech rights of students against the disruption the protests are causing. Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has arrived in Amman, Jordan on Tuesday for a meeting with King Abdullah.
This is a critical moment in making sure that everything that needs to be done actually gets being done.
Jordan is his latest stop as part of a broader trip to the Middle East aimed at discussing post-war Gaza with Arab partners and to press Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to take the steps that U.S. President Joe Biden has demanded earlier this month to improve the humanitarian situation in Gaza. So far, Israel and Hamas have failed to agree to a ceasefire in the Gaza conflict. And as you've heard, Secretary Blinken is in the Middle East to try to improve the humanitarian situation and lay the groundwork for what happens next. VOA's Anita Powell reports from the White House.
With no Gaza ceasefire in sight, Secretary of State Antony Blinken landed in Riyadh Monday, meeting with Arab leadership and Saudi Arabia's crown prince to discuss Washington's desire for more humanitarian aid and plans for a post-conflict Gaza. Blinken said the U.S. was close to finishing a security agreement with Saudi Arabia that would be offered if the country makes peace with Israel. He continued to push for calm in Gaza and a pathway to a Palestinian state.
The most effective way to address the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, to alleviate the suffering of children, women and men, and to create space for a more just and durable solution, is to get ceasefire and hostage resolved. But we're also not waiting on a ceasefire to take the necessary steps to meet the needs of civilians in Gaza. President Biden has insisted that Israel take specific, concrete, measurable steps to better address humanitarian suffering, civilian harm, and the safety of aid workers in Gaza.
On Monday, the White House said it was way past time to declare a ceasefire, to get humanitarian aid into Gaza, and to bring the hostages home, the administration's top priority. Karine Jean-Pierre is White House press secretary.
In recent days, there has been new progress in talks, and currently the onus is indeed on Hamas. There is a deal on the table, and they need to take it. We believe that all efforts need to be brought to bear to convince Hamas to accept the proposal immediately.
But this conflict has spilled far beyond the confines of the blockaded exclave. U.S. student protests are gaining momentum, including at one of the nation's largest institutions, the University of Texas at Austin. Last week, that state's governor called in police to arrest dozens of protesters. Many academics condemned that move, saying President Joe Biden should address the protesters' concerns. Jeremy Suri is a history professor at the University of Texas at Austin.
he has to show even more clear results. There has to be a pause in the fighting. Hostages have to be returned. There have to be visible negotiations. And he has to show that he is pushing both sides, not just one side, but both sides to the table. And so he needs results. He really needs results this summer.
And the protests are moving ever closer to the seat of power. On Saturday, they gathered outside a formal journalist dinner in Washington, attended by the president. And on Sunday, Hamas's media office organized a gratitude event in the city of Rafah, with Palestinian schoolchildren massing to thank U.S. protesters for their activism. Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
Shifting gears now to the war in Ukraine, Russia launches a deadly attack on Odessa and Kharkiv, and NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg visits the Ukrainian parliament. VOA correspondent Anna Chernikova brings us the latest from Kyiv.
Local authorities have declared April 30th as a day of mourning. This after Russian forces launched a deadly missile attack on Odessa and bomb attack on Kharkiv. According to the latest information from Odessa, 5 people were confirmed killed and 28 injured, including 2 children and a pregnant woman. Residential buildings and civilian infrastructure were damaged. Ukrainian prosecutor general reported that the Russian forces hit Odessa with an Iskander ballistic missile with a cluster warhead in order to kill as many civilians as possible. Metal fragments and debris of the rocket were found in a radius of 1.5 kilometers from the site of the shelling. Local authorities in Kharkiv confirmed one person was killed and at least 7 others were injured as a result of the attack on residential buildings. In general, situation at the front line remains tense. Oleksandr Sirsky, commander-in-chief of the armed forces of Ukraine, confirmed that Russian forces advanced in the area around Avdiivka, while Ukrainian forces had to withdraw to more protected defense lines to save lives of the personnel. Meanwhile, in Kyiv, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg arrived to Kyiv on April 29th to meet with President Zelensky and talk about Ukraine's perspectives to become a part of the alliance. Also during the meeting, Zelensky and Stoltenberg talked about $100 billion NATO special fund to support Ukraine. Stoltenberg also made an address in the Ukrainian parliament where he expressed his respect to the Ukrainian military, which restrains Russian aggression, but he also said that he cannot predict when Ukraine will become a member of NATO. President Zelensky believes that Ukraine will not be able to become a member of NATO until the victory in the war against Russia.
Ми будемо в НАТО тільки коли переможемо.
In my personal opinion, we will be in NATO only when we win. I don't think that we will be accepted into NATO in a time of war. For some of the NATO members, it is a risk. For some, there is simply skepticism because of it. The question of NATO is, as the Secretary General correctly said, a question of the majority. And the majority is a political question. And for Ukraine to be politically accepted into the alliance, the victory is needed.
Zelensky added that when the time comes, no one will raise the issue of compatibility with NATO and the level of the Ukrainian military. The president believes that one of the reasons for today's war is that Ukraine was not in the alliance before. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
The debris from a missile that landed in the Ukrainian city of Kharkiv on January 2nd was from a North Korean missile. This, according to UN sanctions monitors. Reuters' Angela Johnston has more.
This footage is from days after the January strike. At the time, the local prosecutor's office showed fragments of the missile to the media, suggesting they could have been from one supplied by North Korea. In the report, the monitors concluded that the debris was from a Hwasong-11 series missile and is in violation of the arms embargo on North Korea. It's been under UN sanctions since 2006, over its ballistic missile and nuclear programs. In their report, the monitors say they, quote, could not independently identify from where the missile was launched, nor by whom. Information about the missile's trajectory, supplied by Ukraine, suggests it was launched from Russia, the report says.
Russia and the DPRK must be held accountable for their actions.
The U.S. and others have previously accused North Korea of transferring weapons to Russia to use against Ukraine, which it invaded over 2 years ago. Both have denied the accusations. Last year, they vowed to deepen military relations.
That's Angela Johnston of Reuters reporting for us. Elsewhere in Europe, it was a tense morning in the British capital as a man with a sword went on a rampage in eastern London. VOA's Henry Ridgewell is there.
Yeah, the police have told us that just before 7 a.m. local time this morning, they were called to Hainault, which is in northeast London, of reports of a man wielding what looked like a samurai sword, having crashed a car into a house, was going on the rampage in this area of London and looking to attack local residents. The police said that they arrived on the scene, around a dozen officers, very quickly after those calls came in. And the suspect was on the roof of a garage of one of those properties. The officers shouted at him to come down. He refused to comply, and so they tasered him and then managed to arrest him. And police say the total time from those calls going in, those emergency calls to the arrest, was around 22 minutes. So all this happened very quickly. Around 1:30 local time, the police very sadly confirmed that one of the victims of the attack, a 13-year-old boy, had died from his injuries. There were four other people who were also injured. They are all currently in hospital at the moment, although their injuries aren't thought to be life-threatening. Two of those people are police officers who will require surgery to their wounds. The police have also said that this does not appear to be terror-related, but they would not be drawn on if they knew the suspect previous to this attack, or indeed whether the suspect had any connection to the properties or the people who he attacked. They just said that a 36-year-old man is now in custody in a London police station and that they will update further on the investigation as the facts become clear.
Henry Ridgewell in London. You're listening to Flashpoint Global Crises. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Tension rises in the South China Sea and the temperature rises across South Asia. But first, turning our attention to Africa, U.S. officials are negotiating the removal of American troops from Niger after the country's military junta ended a long-standing agreement with the U.S. Niger is the latest Sahel country to eject Western forces and replace them with Russian troops, though analysts say similar moves have not improved military security for Niger's neighbors, Mali and Burkina Faso. Henry Wilkins has the story.
The U.S. State Department said Wednesday that U.S. officials in Niger were negotiating the withdrawal of U.S. forces from the country. 2 weeks earlier, Russian troops arrived in Niger's capital, Niamey, to offer security support in the country's nine-year-old conflict with militants linked to Islamic State group and Al-Qaeda. Niger is the latest Sahel country fighting an insurgency to eject Western forces and replace them with Russian troops after neighbouring Burkina Faso and Mali. One analyst told VOA the move was unlikely to improve security, however. Bakary Sambé is with the Timbuktu Institute's African Centre for Peace Studies in Mali. He says that Mali chasing away France, only to replace it with Russia, is not a sign of sovereignty. On the contrary, he says Mali has delegated its sovereignty even further. He says he doesn't believe Russia can provide significant assistance. Data from the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project shows that deadly violence continued to rise after Russian troops arrived in Mali in December of 2021. Deaths from conflict more than doubled in 2022 from the year before. In Burkina Faso, conflict deaths doubled in 2023, the year France withdrew. Russian troops arrived in January 2024. Nonetheless, anti-Western sentiment has risen across the Sahel in recent years, in particular against France, the former colonial power in the region. Hassane Kone of the Institute for Security Studies, an Africa-based think tank, said the anti-Western sentiment derives from the principle that the presence of Western troops, who have been there for around 10 years, has not succeeded in reversing the trend of violence. Conspiracy theories that Western forces are assisting militants are also rife in the Sahel, in part due to Russian disinformation campaigns, experts say. International media have reported the departure of US troops as a victory for Russian geopolitical interests. But Kone says it's about Niger's right to choose its partners. He says he doesn't see it as a victory for Russia and finds that interpretation simplistic because Niger is a sovereign country. Both analysts VOA spoke to agree that America's departure will leave big gaps in Niger's ability to conduct military operations, particularly in intelligence gathering. Not all American troops may be withdrawing, a top US military official told the Associated Press on Thursday. He said that negotiations with Niger are ongoing. Henry Wilkins, VOA News.
On Tuesday, China's foreign ministry urged the Philippines to stop what it calls provocations and not to challenge China's determination to safeguard its sovereignty after a maritime incident in the South China Sea. The Philippines has accused China of damaging one of its boats in the disputed waters near the Scarborough Shoals from the use of water cannons by two Chinese Coast Guard ships. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Lin Jian said that Philippine ships intruded into China's territorial waters in the South China Sea, and China took necessary measures to drive them away. However, the Scarborough Shoal, where the incident took place, is in international waters, and no country has sovereignty. Meanwhile, further to the west, Maldives President Mohamed Moyuzu is expected to strengthen ties with China following the landslide win by his party in recent parliamentary elections. The polls, held under the shadow of a rivalry between India and China for influence, are being seen as a setback for India's bid to limit Beijing's presence in the Indian Ocean. Anjana Pasricha in New Delhi has the report.
The sweeping victory of Maldives President Mohamed Moyuzu's People's National Congress is seen as a strong endorsement of his policy since taking office 6 months ago of pursuing close ties with China and reducing dependence on neighboring India. With control of three-quarters of seats in parliament, including allies, that policy could be fast-tracked, say analysts in New Delhi. Harsh Pant is director of studies at the Observer Research Foundation in New Delhi.
I think there'll be certainly some worry that that now there is one party rule in the Maldives, and there'll be a momentum to Mr. President Moon's policies in favor of China and tilted against India.
After the elections, Beijing said it is ready to strengthen cooperation with Maldives. Moyuzu's party has promised an infrastructure boom with Chinese funding for housing, bridges and airports, among other projects. Analysts say the strong parliamentary victory has also given the Maldivian leader the mandate to strengthen strategic ties with Beijing. The two countries signed a military assistance agreement last month, which China said does not target any third party. Pant again.
Dislodging India and bringing in Chinese defense, China as a defense partner, is certainly something which one will have to observe if that trend also continues. Because the expectation had always been about balancing India and China. Now the sense is that it is going one way.
Rivals China and India have long jostled for influence in the strategically located country that sits along vital shipping routes in the Indian Ocean. Strategic ties which India had built under Moyuzu's predecessor have taken a hit as the new Maldivian leader vows to boost the country's own defenses. The last of about 90 Indian troops in the archipelago who assisted in humanitarian evacuations are due to leave the country soon. Analysts say the area is likely to see more Chinese presence, a survey ship docked in Maldivian waters in February, raising concerns in India. China says such research ships that have also visited Sri Lanka in recent years conduct scientific studies. India fears they could collect data of military value. India has taken a cautious approach as diplomatic ties fray. Sriram Cholia is dean at the Jindal School of International Affairs.
They need economic assistance from many players. India is continuing to commit economic aid, foreign assistance, development partnership work for the Maldives. And that is one means by which we'll try and maintain leverage.
For the time being, however, the recent Maldivian vote is a setback for India's bid to counter China's growing influence in the Indian Ocean. Anjana Pasricha, VOA News, New Delhi.
Authorities across South and Southeast Asia are warning people to stay indoors and stay hydrated as a crushing and deadly heat wave sweeps across the region. VOA's Lori London reports.
The weeks-long heat wave that has been gripping the region with record high temperatures has led to school closings and, again, urgent health warnings in a number of countries. Many residents in Hanoi have chosen to spend their Reunification Day holiday indoors Tuesday as the heat wave scorches Vietnam, with temperatures rising as high as 44 degrees Celsius in some parts of the country.
It's extremely hot and it wears me out. My body is very tired and uncomfortable from all the sweating.
In eastern India's Kolkata city, which recorded a maximum temperature of 42 degrees Celsius, laborers on construction sites say they have no choice but to continue working under the sun for long hours.
We will not be able to tolerate the scorching heat if we do not take breaks. If we are not working while we are on duty, then we will not get paid. So it is a compulsion for us to keep working.
Several towns in Myanmar last week were on lists of the hottest spots worldwide. Scientists have said the number of heat-related deaths around the world has been rising significantly in recent years, along with temperatures. And not just human lives are at risk. In the Bangladeshi capital, Dhaka, pet shop owners were seen spraying water this week on animals and birds to help lower their body temperature.
We are trying our best to keep them alive and well. We're doing everything in our knowledge.
Experts say climate change is contributing to more frequent, severe, and longer heat waves during summer months as records continue to be broken.
Year after year, right? So normally this year beating the year before. But because of the El Nino effect, that leave particular region hotter than normal.
Thailand scientist Pech Manopawder describes an ominous scenario for Southeast Asian regions if temperatures continue to rise over the next 5 years.
An inhabitable Earth pattern is coming, you know, because we might not familiar with that. We think that we are fine with the hot weather, but now with the temperature, the heat wave, the intensity of the long period of hot weather, I think we'll have to make sure that people know about the risk as well. You know, the number of people getting heat stroke increasing at a rapid rate as well. So even in the tropical country.
The persistent sweltering weather in Southeast Asia has also sparked fears of water shortages, power outages, and damage to agricultural crops. Lori London, VOA News, Washington.
And finally, a story that doesn't rise to the level of a global crisis, but might certainly become a personal crisis for many, many people. British authorities are warning British football fans headed to Munich for the Euros 24 this summer that German beer is stronger than English beer. The British government is urging its citizens to drink responsibly and respect local laws while rooting for their favorite team. And that's going to wrap it up for today. There is more VOA coverage 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and across our social media platforms. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for listening. Until tomorrow, I'm Steve Karish.
For deeper dives and expert analysis, listen to VOA Podcasts. Issues in the News explores the biggest stories every weekend, while International Edition keeps you informed every weekday. Plus, with a 5-minute newscast at the top of every hour, you're always up to date.